It's really great to see everybody. I hope you can see me. I hope you can hear me. Yes? Thumbs up? Excellent. Yes, that's good. Thank you very much. Really great to see you all on. It's nice to see my mum and dad there. That's nice. Hi, mum and dad. And it's good to see everybody else. We are going to have a very exciting share today. Please God, we're going to have to work hard today. It's going to be a continuation of last week, but I will recap a little bit what we did last week. First of all, can I just announce that we're very happy to have sponsorship today and grateful for that sponsorship. The shiur is kindly sponsored today by Mark and Deborah Zohar. I just saw Mrs. Zohar on the screen there. In loving memory of Deborah's mother, Bluma Bat Yechiel, Zichron Livracha, whose yuletide is today on the 22nd of Tevet. So thank you to the Zohar for that sponsorship, and there should be an aliyah for the neshama of Bluma Bat Yechiel, Mrs. Zohar's mother. Also, I'd like to announce that all of the shiurim for the rest of the 2021 academic year have been very kindly sponsored anonymously for all of the shiurim going forward. So you'll hear these names coming up quite a little bit. In the merit of aliyahs for the neshamas of Matasyahu ben Yisrael, Aaron ben Menachem Leib, and Eliana Bas Yaakov. So we're very grateful to that anonymous sponsor for having sponsored shiurim through. That doesn't, of course, prevent other sponsors from coming in, and we would be very grateful to receive that sponsorship. Please be in touch with Mrs. Spivak. So we now found ourselves at the end of Sefer Bereishis, and for these few weeks we've been going through a number of issues. If you remember, we spent 2 shiurim on evolution. We spent 4 shiurim on the issues of Jews and non-Jews in Sefer Bereishis. We spent a little shiur on Hanukkah. We spent a couple of shiurim on Pelegesh and marriage. And for the last week and this week, we're dealing with the issue of burial, autopsy, and dissection. And that will bring us to the end. Next week, we're into Shmot already. I want to move into a different kind of theme. I'd like to do a few shiurim on the halachas of brachas. We haven't dealt with many brachas issues over the years, and I'd like to start with a very contemporary shaila, which is fascinating. What it brings together is the appropriate bracha to make on receiving the corona vaccine, which has been discussed by a number of poskim over the last week or two. I'm sure it's very relevant. I'm sure most people who are on this this shiur today have received, hopefully they have, their first vaccine. I'm sure that nobody has yet received their second, or probably nobody, but everybody is on the verge of doing that. So when you get that vaccine, do you say a bracha? Do you not say a bracha? Do you say a tefillah? There's lots of fascinating inyanim that come. So let's start that next week, please God, as a series on some brachas issues. But for now, we're still in the issue of burial, dissection, and autopsy. Again, if there's any problem with the internet, please forgive me. It often starts off a bit choppy and kind of calms down. If I disappear or freeze, please don't run away. I will be back with you as soon as I possibly can. We'll daven for some good internet. So what did we do last week? So last week we looked briefly at the issue of the embalming of Yaakov and Yosef. That obviously we're not going to go into again, but look at last week's sheet. We then opened up the question of autopsy and burial, and we said that there are really 4 main issues that we have to deal with halachically if we're asking the question, is it appropriate to have an autopsy, a post-mortem after a person dies, or to have dissection for the purpose of medical research, for the purpose of medical training. And we said there are 4 main issues. Issue 1 is the double mitzvah of burial. There is a mitzvah to bury a person as quickly as you possibly can, if possible, before the next morning. And that is 2 Torah mitzvahs. We looked at that last week, and therefore delaying that burial is risking breaching those mitzvahs. We still also, however, there are reasons to delay, which we'll see today again. The other 3 reasons are nivul hamet, cutting up a body or preventing its burial is a lack of kavod, it's a lack of honor, it's a desecration of the dead. And therefore, a dissection and autopsy is in danger of being a breach of that Torah mitzvah of nivul hamet. Then there are 2 other issues. One is hana'a min hamet. You are not allowed to get any benefit from a dead body. And we'll see today, modern day poskim, as to what is the status of research and medical knowledge. Is that benefit in some way from a body? That's another issue. And finally, we saw there was an issue of kapara. That Chazal are very clear that the neshama, the soul of the person, only really begins to receive atonement when the burial takes place. And therefore, all the time that you're delaying that burial, you're delaying the atonement. The question is, can a person forego that? Can a person say, okay, listen, it's my life, It's minor shama. If I don't mind having my body dissected for a couple of months for medical research, that'll be good for minor shama, not bad for minor shama. Maybe that's okay. We'll see that today. So they were the halachic issues we raised last week, and then we looked at five cases in the Gemara which deal directly or indirectly with autopsy and dissection. If you remember, just to remind you, we dealt with the case of the murderer on death row, where they're about to kill him, and the question comes up, well, how do we know that the victim wasn't a trefa? A trefa is someone who already has some kind of a serious illness. They would probably die within the year. And the halacha is, if somebody murders a trefa, then it's still murder. They're still a murderer, but they don't get the death penalty. So the Gemara says, maybe we should do an autopsy on every victim to check if they were a trefa anyway, and then we will not be allowed to execute the murderer. And the Gemara rejects that and says, well, it won't be conclusive, and you can never know whether the place where the murder weapon went in was masking the trefus that was there. So it rejects that. But the implication being that if the autopsy would help to save a life, then it would be allowed. Okay, that was one suggestion. We had a second case. Remember the Maaseh in Bnei Brak. In Bnei Brak, there was a young man, just recapping on last week, a young man who inherited a fortune of money and then sold it all off and then subsequently died. And the relatives, the inheritors of this family, came to the court and said, listen, we were expecting this inheritance, and this young man was a minor. He was below bar mitzvah. He had no right to sell off our inheritance. And the purchaser said, excuse me, we've paid money. This is our land. And they went to Rabbi Akiva and said, can we do exhume the body and do a sort of post-mortem to check whether the young man was indeed bar mitzvah or not? If he was, then he was allowed to sell the land. And Rabbi Akiva said, no, you can't do it because it's a desecration of the body. It's nivul hamet. And it's also, he said, it won't help. Because by this time you won't be able to tell whether the man was a major, a minor, or a major, and therefore he doesn't allow it. And there's a discussion there, is that just the family that's not allowed to do it? What about the purchasers? We saw that last week. Then we saw the case of Cleopatra's mass experiments on her maids, which were, she got them all pregnant, and they were liable to the death penalty anyway, and she then dissected all of the maids after they'd been executed and examined the fetuses to see what the development stages of the fetuses were. We saw that. And finally, we saw two cases. One was of a case where the students of Rabbi Ishmael got the body of some kind of a zona, some prostitute that had been killed by the government, and they boiled her down to examine how many bones there were in the body, anatomical research. We saw that case. And finally, we looked at the case of the bones of the alcoholic right at the end of last year, and we saw there were different Tanaim, different Amoraim, excuse me, who worked looking at these bones and deciding whether the effects of drinking had damaged the bones, etc. So that's what we did last week. This week, what I want to do is I want to bring the whole question right up to speed and talk about the 20th century. The 20th century, obviously, gave rise to a great number of shilas about anatomy, because with the growth of medical schools around the world in the 19th and 20th centuries, people needed bodies, people needed cadavers to work on, to train their medical students. Especially with the foundation of the Hebrew University in 1918, so this became a very, very live and controversial issue. Because the Hebrew youth said, look, we're a Jewish country, we're a Jewish university, we should be dissecting Jewish bodies to give Jewish medical research. And that caused a furore, which we'll see went on all the way through to the 1970s, 80s. It died down in the 80s for reasons that we'll talk about when we get there. So what I want to do now Be'ezrat Hashem, is share the screen. I'll just put the notes again once more on the chat so that everybody can see them in case there were any people who came in just a little bit late. So you can get those notes. I've put them up a couple of times already, but here they go again. Okay, and I'll share my screen. We have a lot of reading to do today. So please bear with me. I'll try and make sure and keep it as brief and interesting as I can, but we've got to get through some key tshuvas. Let's look at a few brief comments of the Shulchan Aruch first. The Shulchan Aruch says a lot about burial, but a few things just to summarize where we were from last time. I brought you four extracts from the Shulchan Aruch. The first one is in, they're all obviously from Hilchos Aveilos in Yoredeh. So the first is in Shin Nun Zayin. Look at number one. Asal halin hamet, you're not allowed to leave overnight a body without burial. Ela im kein hilinu lichvoda, unless you did it for the merit, for the honor of the dead. If you left the burial for the honor of the dead, that's okay. Lahavi lo aram, maybe to get him a proper coffin, tachrich in shrouds, or mekonenot, or women who are going to wail at the funeral, as was the minhag in those days, or kadesh yavo krovim ol hashmia yaro, or to bring relatives from afar. That's also for the honor of the dead, or to announce the funeral, which more people can come. That is a reason for delaying. And we saw last week that in the modern day Yerushalayim, poskim differ on how long you're allowed to wait in order to bring relatives from Chutz Laaretz. Some poskim are very clear that in Yerushalayim you mamash have to bury that day. There's nothing to wait for, no one to wait for. And others are more open to waiting a day or so for the relatives to come. But that's in principle. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, "V'kol meitim and all bodies hamamaher lahoiti misato." The quicker you can bring them to burial, harizem shubach, that is the better. Aval al aviv ve'imoy, for parents where there's more hespedim to be made, more covered to be given, al aviv ve'imoy harizem agunet, maybe not so quick. Ela im kein haya erev Shabbos, unless it's erev Shabbos or erev Chag, etc., etc. So there is an imperative to try and be as quick as one can for the burial, unless there are reasons not to. Another Shulchan Aruch, number two. Ein molichin meis mi'ir sheyesh bo kvura li'ir acheret. Let's say a person dies in London and they say, I'd rather be buried in New York. Then I'm sorry, you know, a person gets buried where they die. You're not allowed to bring a body, delay a burial, to bury a person elsewhere. Ela in kein michutz la'aretz la'aretz. Unless, of course, they die in chutz la'aretz and say, I wish to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. That's well known as a reason to delay the burial. And here's a very important remark, which brings in a tshuva of the Rashba, which will be influential in our analysis. Or you can take a person to his family plot, that you can delay for. If the person instructed the family to move them from a place to place, or said they should be buried at home, and not in a formal cemetery, you can listen to them. Sid alav, and you're allowed to treat the body, and this is important for us. This is a tshuva of the Rashba from Spain in the 1300s. You're allowed to treat the body with lime, with some kind of acid, kedei la'akel habasar maher, to remove the flesh, so that you can move the body without putrefaction. You're allowed to treat the body and boil down the flesh, laholicha la'makam asher tiva, in order to fulfill the wishes of the person, of the deceased, to move the body from A to B. Now, of course, today we have refrigeration, all sorts of things, it's not relevant, but the Rashba is saying that you were allowed to interfere with the body, to apply chemicals to the body, to move it from place A to place B. That was okay. That's not considered to be a bizayon, an insult, a desecration to the dead. And we'll see that principle coming up in the tshuvas in a few minutes. Finally, two brief points. Hanosin, number three. Hanosin meitu ba'aron v'loy kavru b'karkei. If a person just puts their relative in an aron, doesn't put them in the ground, puts them in a sarcophagus, in today's world, over mishum malin esameit. That's not allowed. That's a breach of the mitzvah of burial. They have to be in the ground. So im natnu ba'aron v'kavru b'karkei, if they put them in a coffin in the ground, eino ovelav, that's not a breach of the mitzvah, but it's not ideal. Mikol makam yafel akavru b'karkei mamash, it's much better to bury a person directly in the ground with no coffin, even in Chutz Laaretz. Now, of course, in Chutz Laaretz, in England for sure, and I'm sure in America, they will not permit a burial without a coffin. But in Israel, of course, they do, and that is the normal course of events, that they do not, unless there are special circumstances, they do not use a coffin. They bury straight in the ground in a talus. And finally, the Shulchan Aruch number four, Meis bein oivu b'kachavim bein Yisrael, whether a non-Jew or a Jewish body, tachrichin asurim b'hano. The shrouds and certainly the body itself are prohibited to benefit from. Now this is interesting. We'll see, this is a controversial psak. The Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying that the prohibition of benefit from a body includes non-Jewish bodies as well. Now that is actually, we'll see, a minority position. Most poskim rule that actually you are allowed to get benefit from bodies, if they're non-Jewish, and we'll see where that comes in. Somebody pops in here with a point on the chat, which is, today we bury in the wall. Yes, interesting that there are all sorts of new minhagim because of restrictions on burial ground, there are different ways that people are buried today. But they always put some earth in there somewhere. Even in Har HaMenuchos in Yerushalayim, where they have a very elaborate system of burial kind of floors, levels, there's always some soil in there as well. It's like a karka. But of course, the original minhag was to bury in a cave. And there is a group of people that are trying to go back to an ancient biblical burial system. There is a movement, a halakhic movement, trying to move that way so as to save space in Eretz Israel. Please God, the country should get bigger and bigger and bigger. And if in 40, 50 years there are 10, 15, 20 million Jewish people in this country, then there has to be somewhere to bury them. That's something we need to think about. But that's not my topic for today. Okay, fine. Let us go on to the tshuvas. Really, interestingly, as a topic, apart from the sources in the Gemara that we saw, the issues are not really discussed that much in the times of the Rishonim. Normally, in an halachic analysis, we would be looking at Rashi, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Rashba. There's not much discussion there, because autopsy and dissection was completely taboo throughout almost all of the Middle Ages. People just did not do it. Certainly not Jewish people, and not non-Jews because of the church as well. The matter only really came to a head in the early modern period. The first tshuva on this was in 1737. Rav Yaakov Emden, who we've recently been studying of Pilegesh fame, but here he's more mainstream. Rav Yaakov Emden was asked by a student in the University of Göttingen whether they could on Shabbos participate in dissection on animals. He was a student enrolled in the university. They had a dissection, planned for Shabbos on dogs, actually. And he raised the shaila. I didn't bring you the whole tshuva, but he said, under no circumstances, because it was a breach of Hilchos Shabbos. And then he went on to say, and you're not allowed to get any benefit from a corpse either, a human corpse, whether Jewish or not, irrespective of Shabbos. So that was really the first tshuva that came out in the modern period. Ironically, coincidentally, 1737 was actually the year that the church gave permission to people in order to do dissections. That had been prohibited under canon law, but in 1737 the Catholic Church allowed people to dissect bodies, which was actually very important for not only science but for art. There were many artists through the 16th, 17th centuries like Michelangelo, Da Vinci, Raphael, who wanted to dissect bodies in order to draw them. For those purposes, and the church finally gave permission to that in 1737, the year, as I said, of the first major tshuva, that it was not allowed in halacha. But the mainstream tshuva that we have on this is the one we need to read in detail now. This is a Noga B'Yehuda, and I hope you'll forgive me if we take a little bit of time to read this tshuva through. I've actually, in number 5, I've given a few numbers on the line so that we don't get lost. I may not read every line, but we need to really analyze it properly. Every subsequent tshuva goes back to the Noga B'Yehuda as the foundational text, if you like, for all of these issues. So have a look at what he says. Number 5. Benidom HaShela Sheba'elav Mikhila Kadosha London. A question has come to me. He was in Prague in the late 1700s. A question has come to me from London. All the best things, all the best questions come in London, right? There was a young man, or maybe he was an old man, who had a bladder calculus, or maybe it was a gallstone issue. And the doctors, as is their way, cut him up. And they did an operation. The lie, also lie, but it didn't work. And he died, not surprisingly. Going to doctors in the late 1700s was far, far more likely to kill you than to help you. I read a statistic, it's only in 1911 that going to a doctor actually helped to increase your lifespan rather than decrease it. So that's something to be aware of, be thankful for. The people in London asked the question, can we dissect this dead Jewish person? But Mokamazeh, in the place where, you know, the calculus, the gallstone was, or the bladder stone was, to see how the operation works, so that we can learn from this, and we can improve our medical practice for the future. Let's see what we did wrong. And then if something like this might happen in the future, which it would, We'll know better how to cut things open, to heal future patients. We won't have to make too much of an incision. We can do more microsurgery. So we can learn and save lives in the future. Fine. Line number five. Is that a problem of desecrating this body? Or are you going to say, it's permitted because you can save lives. This dissection, this post-mortem, will save lives in the future. People will get better at this surgery. And the rabbis that said it was allowed, they learned from the embalming, or maybe mummification of Yaakov and Yosef in the Torah. What did they learn? The Chanitas Malachim, Malchei Yisrael, and later on with the Jewish kings as well. In Kizeh Hayalich Vodam, if that was a kavod, that was an honor for them. Gamzeh kavod ames. This is an honor too. What an honor for your body to be used as a medical opportunity to save lives in future. What a fantastic thing. Lioz Revach Fahatala Al Yada Leterecha Oilam. You will be a source of savior, salvation for the world. These were the people who said it was allowed. And they brought from this tshuva of the Rashba, like we saw, which we said that you're allowed. The father commanded his children to move him, to the family plot. You're allowed to put chemicals on the flesh, etc. Clearly you see from this that there are circumstances where someone wanted something done with their body, and the Rashba allowed them to do that there. Okay, and that's even more applicable here. Here it's before they buried him. There they exhumed him and poured chemicals on the body. Here they've not yet buried him. Surely it's okay. Ad kan divrei hamatzer. That was the perspective of those who said yes. Now the other side. He said, these are the people who said no. Shehari Amru says in Bava Basra, we saw about the Maisa B'Bnei Brak, Sha'amar Rabbi Akiva, Iyatem Risham, Renavloi. Rabbi Akiva would not allow the body to be dissected in order to even to save large amounts of money. But Chacham Hamatir, but then the rabbi in London who said it was okay, he said it's not the same. Hey Shivloi, the Sha'ani Sham, it's different there. The Bishvil Mammon Rotsu Lenavlo. There it was for money. Okay, you can't desecrate. Well, Chenama Lahem Rabbi Akiva She'enam Rishayim. That's why he said they weren't allowed. Ma She'en Ken Kan, but that's not the case here. Shehutzrachul Hatzalas Nefashas Pikuach Nefesh. And Pikuach Nefesh should really be the trump card. Once you put down Pikuach Nefesh, we're doing this to save lives. Everything else should fall away, in theory. Okay. Let's get to his answer. Okay, now. Fine. Look at line number 16 here. Va'oid hevi covered ma'alasa raya. And you, the questioner, says the Nebi Huda, brought another proof. Misuki the chulin from the death row murderer. Remember the death row? The guy in death row? And should we examine the victim? Mishum ibud neshama, the having an avlo. But the conclusion there is if it would indeed save lives, you can dissect the body. You would have been allowed to do that. The key came the sham vaday hatsalahu. And if you say there it was more clear, it was clearer, you would have definitely been able to save him. The can topic, but here with the case of the bladder calculus, it would have been much less clear. That's not true. He says sham gam can topic. There also it was a question. And then he goes and says that in any case, even if it's topic, Pikuach Nefesh, even if it's a Sufik on a Sufik, remember the famous Sugya in Yuma, that a house collapses on Shabbos, and you're not sure if there are people in the house, and even if there are people in the house, you're not sure if they're alive, and even if they're alive, you're not sure that there are Jews there or non-Jews. Even multiple levels of Sufik, Sufik on a Sufik on a Sufik, a doubt on a doubt on a doubt, you still break everything apart from the big three. So what is there to talk about? So it says the Noli Yudah, I'll tell you what there is. Now, line number 20. Et kol eile katavti, I've written all of this, lefi divreichem, according to your arguments, She'atem kairim ze pikuach nefesh, hatzalas nefesh. You called it pikuach nefesh. Aval ani tama, but I am very surprised at you, he says. Haloim ze yikra, afilu safik hatzalas nefesh. I'm not sure that dissection for medical research is even called a question of pikuach nefesh. In kein lama lachem kol pilpul, v'haloi zehu din aruch umufurisha, afilu safik doich ha-shabbos. If it really is pikuach nefesh, why are you even asking the question? If it's really pikuach nefesh, then of course it's allowed. But then he says, and here's the key line, which I've put in bold here and underlined. He says, omnam, however, kol zeh v'yesh sofik sakonis nefashos lefanenu. And lefanenu is the key word here. Remember that word, we'll see it all the way through the shir. This only applies when you have pikuach nefesh, even sofik, even a doubt of pikuach nefesh, lefanenu, there's someone in front of us. There may be someone buried in the rubble. It's a real question. It's a live question. Kagoin chayle, like a sick person, or nefilat hagal, or a collapsed building. V'chein b'meseches chun, and so too with the rotzeach, with this guy on death row, hapikuach nefesh lefanenu. We have a person who is either going to die or live, and we need to know the answer. V'chein afinu le'inyan mammon, and even in the case of Bnei Brak, Sham hezek lefanenu. There's a direct loss in front of us. Are they going to lose the money or not lose the money? Aval, and here's the key. Benidon didan. In our case, ein kan shum chayle hatzarech lezeh. There are no sick people who need this. You're just doing it on the off chance, in case for the future, maybe. Rakshi writes in Nilmod, you just want to learn. Chochmazu, you want to learn more wisdom in medicine. Ulai zamin chayle shiyeh hatzarech lezeh. Maybe there'll be someone who needs this. Vadai zaloy dachini mishum chashasha kala zo, for such a far-fetched possibility, we do not override anything. Shum isa Torah or filo isa midrabanan. I will not allow you, he says, to desecrate a body, even if it's a rabbinic prohibition, in order for such a far-fetched pikuach nefesh that we need to do it in order to maybe save lives in the future. And then at the end he says, because if you run with your argument, you'll be able to do anything on Shabbos. All of the people and the researchers in the labs will be able to drive in their cars and go and turn on the lights and open up their computers. Well, obviously he doesn't say this in the 1700s, but just in case they might, that Shabbos, find the cure for whatever it is they're working on. He says, and that couldn't possibly be called pikuach nefesh. It's far too removed from pikuach nefesh. And then he says, at the very end, ulachein arichos zeh hu laloi terech. I don't see why I even needed to go to such lengths. The aim is there shum tzad lahefe. There is no way we can ever permit dissection of a body for medical research. Uladati shkaga yatsam and if they covered ma'alasa, and the person who allowed it made a big mistake. Ha'ashem mihir lahashil lahashid lahakel. He was too quick to be lenient. And this Noid of Yehuda, which sets down this lefanenu test, is the baseline for all future psakim. Okay? So, apologies that we read that in some length, but I think we needed to. And that really was the benchmark. The next major person that came along is the Chasam Sofer. I brought you a tshuva here of the Chasam Sofer, and he picked straight up on the Noid of Yehuda. The Chasam Sofer was the next generation in Hungary. And he says, I looked into the Chasam Sofer, and it's very clear that if there is, look at what he says here, look at the top of page 3 here. He quotes the Chasam Sofer and goes across the Noda B'Yehuda and quotes all of the arguments. Ulefiza, he says, Kusach Chasam Sofer, I, haya lefanenu, if there was in front of us, chayle sheyesh bo maka kiyotze b'zeh, if there was, you want to cut up a body. In this particular case, the question was actually slightly different. It was a question of hana'ah. Are you allowed to get hana'ah? Are you allowed to get benefit from the body? And even though the Noda B'Yehuda didn't raise this, the Chasam Sofer says this could have been also one of the major questions that he asked, and the Chasam Sofer raises it, and he says, therefore, if there is a person who needs this treatment, v'roitzim l'nateach hameis, and you want to dissect the body, halazeh, this body, l'rufuata shalzeh, because this person needs it, and of course this will be the case for an organ transplant, obviously, that's clear to kuach nefesh lefanenu, then he says, of course, karov levadai demutter. I'm almost certain that it's completely fine. I'm non nidu lefanenu, mi roitze limkar atzmo, but in our case, somebody wants to sell themselves for medical research. Bichiosa leroifim shintchua said, so the doctors will cut them up, achamosa, after they die, lilmoid mimenu halach hilchas aroifim, hinezer enenu nichnas begedit kuach nefesh klal v'klal. This does not in any way enter into the issue of pikuach nefesh. In Ken Kolim, Udeha Roitin, Yitzchak Shabbos, and he uses the same argument, if that were the case, everything would override Shabbos and the whole thing would fall apart. Ah, what about this shifcha? What about this zona that was boiled down by the students of Rabbi Ishmael? He says she was not Jewish, which makes a lot of sense, which already introduces the issue. Well, maybe it's different between, there's a difference between Jewish bodies and non-Jewish bodies, and we'll get to that soon. Okay. So the Chasam Sofer and the Nodeb Yehuda really draw the line and set the standard. There were a couple of more lenient voices in the 19th century, and I'll just mention two, and then we'll look at an even stricter one. One of them was the Maharam Shik, Rav Moshe Shik, who was a student of the Chasam Sofer, and he says, he opens a little petach, a little opening there, and he says, well, if you consider that medical research is a mitzvah, okay, which you might do, you can easily say that it's a mitzvah to study medical research so that you will be able to save lives. He says, then maybe the benefit that you're getting is agav. He says, it's hanom mimela kasi. It's coming, you're not doing it to get benefit from the body, you're doing it to do the mitzvah. And the benefit is if you like, a side issue, it's an automatic consequence, and maybe that's not something which is prohibited. He opens up a possibility. That's the Maram Shik. Also the Shoal Umeshiv, in Rav Nathanson, in mid-19th century, I brought you number 9 as well, I'll just share it with you, but I'm not going to read it in detail now. The Shoal Umeshiv raises another potential opening for a leniency. He says that Nivul Hameis is only prohibited when there's no good reason, when you're desecrating a body in a destructive way. But if you're doing it for a good reason, for example, we said, he gives the example of Tafri and Aguna. A woman this case he brings here, let's just look for a second at the case. It's a fascinating case. He says, Nishal al echad shenimsa nitzvah b'shibolet anar. A man was found drowned in the river. But in Asko Anashim and Misato, and there were people there that looked after him, he was a mace mitzvah. But like neither im hisigu al simanim, ishkichu al simanim, they didn't really check much on the body. They did a mitzvah, they buried him, and they went forward. Now there's a woman who has a husband missing. Va'ata ha'isha, now this woman comes along, va'amat siman shehaya labala, that I can identify my husband, va'achem me'etzboisav yadav, v'gam achas me'etzboisav raglav. He had an identifying mark on his hand and on his foot. And she claims, I need to know if this man that you found in the river and buried, thank you very much for dealing with it, but I need to know if that's my husband or not. And are you allowed to exhume the body? And then he says, yes. Because that is not considered a bizayon for the mace, that is a covered for the mace to allow an aguna to remarry. And also, he says, we can assume that the man would have wanted his body to be exhumed in order to allow his wife to remarry so that once he's been identified. So there are small voices of heter. There was one major machmir, even more than the Nodeb Yehuda, and I'll just mention him now, number 8, the Rav Yaakov Ettlinger of Germany in the mid-19th century. He has a tshuva on autopsies here, and he's actually very stringent. He quotes the Nodeb Yehuda, he quotes the Chasam Sofer, and I'll give you the, without reading it all inside, because I want to save time for the modern Poskim, he gives you all of those arguments, he says, and I actually disagree. I think it's prohibited even to save life. Why would it possibly be prohibited to save life? Surely every mitzvah can be overridden to save life. And he says, no. There is a discussion in the Gemara, are you allowed to steal money to save your life? And Rashi says, no. You can't steal money to save your life. Tosfos and the Rosh say, well, you can steal it as long as you can pay it back. Okay, there's a whole discussion there. Could be for Rashi that stealing is another one of those things which do not override even a danger to life. But Tosfos and the Rosh says, as long as you can pay it back, it's fine. And he analyzes here, Rabbi Ettlinger, and says, well, listen, if this person's dead, stealing his covered, dissecting him to save a life, is worse than stealing his money. He never gave permission. You're stealing from him. You can't pay him back. And he says, and I'll tell you something else. Even those people in the Rishonim that said it's permitted to steal, to pikuach nefesh, as long as you pay back, that's because, very interesting lomdus, the person themselves will be obligated to spend that money to save your life. Let's say, I desperately need water to to save my life. I break into someone's shop, steal their water, and drink it, save my life. He says, that's okay, according to some opinions, because the shopkeeper himself would be obligated to give me that water, because he has a mitzvah of loisam od adam re'efa. But in a case of a dead body has no mitzvahs at all. So if you're going to steal, as it were, from a dead body by desecrating it, what obligation does that dead body have to you? None. And therefore he says you can't do it. And the position of Rav Yaakov Etlinger, therefore, is much stricter. On the one hand, he says that you may never do a dissection, even to save a life, unless the person gave prior permission, because then you're not stealing from them. However, nevertheless, the position of Rav Etlinger was not taken as being the mainstream position. The mainstream position was certainly the Nodim Yehuda and the Chasam Sofer, that basically you have to have Pikuach Nefesh, but it has to be Lefaneinu, it has to be in front of us. Now, I brought you on page 4, we don't need to look at it inside, but I brought you a number of historical and political issues. Let's take a 3 or 4 minute break to talk about those. The issue in the 20th century of dissection was a very fraught issue for the Jews. In America, in 1917, there was a Shiloh from a TB hospital in Denver, where they asked, they said, we need Jewish bodies to dissect in order to be able to research TB more. And the Rabbonim in America, the Aguda in America, came out absolutely clearly, you may not dissect dead bodies for medical research, a clear psak. In Poland in the 1920s, as part of the whole anti-Semitic build-up through the 1920s and 30s, the Polish authorities made a ruling that Jews may only enroll in medical school in Poland if they bring in a Jewish body to be dissected. Therefore, the Polish authority says, we will not let Jews be doctors unless Jews agree to be dissected. And the young Polish people asked the Rabbonim and said, look, we can't train as doctors unless you permit dissection of bodies. And the Rabbonim said, no, you can't. We're not going to permit it. If necessary, you'll be something else. You won't be a doctor. You'll go somewhere else and train. That was part of the stress of the anti-Semitism in Poland in the 1920s. But in Israel, probably the matter was the most fraught. As I mentioned, in 1918, the Hebrew U was founded, and already by the early 20s, they were debating, should we or shouldn't we have a medical school? How can you have a university without a medical school? There's no such thing. We have to. And a medical school will involve dissecting Jewish bodies. And what they did is they basically went round and around and around, and for 20 years, they avoided having a medical school. So Hebrew U had many faculties before, but they did not have a medical school until the 1940s. When the state was established in 1948, they said, listen, this is ridiculous. We're now a country. How can a country not have a medical school? And Rav Herzog basically came in, we'll see his tshuva soon, and said that he would permit medical research on bodies, Jewish bodies, as long as they were treated with great respect, as long as they were buried afterwards, and he allowed medical research on dead bodies. This resulted in the 1953 Anatomy and Pathology Law in Israel, which was fairly skewed, if you like, towards the medical side, and allowed autopsies and dissections and postmortems without the permission of the families. An important point. There was a great deal of unhappiness about this, and in 1961, this is all before my time, but some of you may remember this, in 1961, Dr. Yitzhak Rafael became the Deputy Health Minister, and he was tasked with forming a committee. Remember, this was only left-wing governments. We're in the 50s, 60s, and 70s here. We haven't got to Menachem Begin yet. And he was tasked with putting together a committee of doctors, of ethicists, of rabbis, to try and propose a revision to this law. And they did. They met many, many, many times. And eventually they proposed something which was much more halachically oriented and gave permission to the families to block autopsies if they didn't want them, etc. And that was put to the health ministry. Misrad HaBriyut said there is no way in the world that we will get that through the Knesset. I remember, almost all of the Knesset members, the Chavri Knesset, were left-wingers in those days. And therefore we have to water it down. They watered it down and put it to Parliament in 1964, and Parliament said, there is no way we are debating this issue, it is too hot to handle, there's going to be an election soon. Have you ever heard of such a thing in Israel, that they're worried that there's going to be an election imminently? And they said, we're going to lose votes, if we debate this, therefore forget it. And they pushed it into the long grass, and nothing happened. In the meantime, autopsies were going on, and things became more and more fraught. If you think things are bad now, listen to this. There was one particular case, the doctors were carrying out autopsies against families' wishes. In one particular case in Kaplan Hospital in Petah Tikva, I don't know if Kaplan Hospital is still there in Petah Tikva, but it may be, but in the 1960s, one of the families of one of these people who'd been designated for dissection, they raided the hospital. The whole chamula came into the hospital, smashed the place to pieces, beat up the medical staff, and said that there's no way you are going to dissect our dear departed one. After this, now listen to this, Misrad HaBriyut made a pronouncement that no one is allowed for treatment in any Israeli hospital unless they agree that they will be dissected after they die. And can you imagine the kind of sorrows that this caused, that people were not going to hospital. People stopped going to hospital for fear that they would be dissected. Okay, someone just said Kaplan is in Rehovot. Okay, good. That's why I don't know of a Kaplan in Petah Tikva. Thank you. And then, of course, the Pikuach Nefesh arguments go the other way around. Now you have to say that you will be dissected in order to get into hospital, etc. So the whole thing was a big mess. It was only resolved, really, in the 1980s when the Begin government came in and you had a more right-wing government, more traditional, more open to halacha, and they voted in a law which, as far as I'm aware, remains to this day, which gives much more power to the family to block autopsies in situations, obviously not in every situation, if there's a criminal investigation, etc. And now it's relatively rare that you hear major blow-ups about autopsies. Every now and then there's a riot or a demonstration or something in Meir Sha'arim, but it's a rarity compared to what was going on in the 50s and 60s, and there are other medical reasons for that, which we'll get to in a minute. Okay, good. That was a little historical excursus. Let's spend the next 20 minutes looking at the modern-day tshuvas. Some of them we'll read inside, some of them we'll summarize outside. So let's start with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein is quite a hardliner on these issues. Someone pointed out now there are non-invasive autopsies. We'll get to that. That's a very important point, which we'll get to in a few minutes. In the 20th century, Rav Moshe Feinstein was one of the main voices, quite a hardliner. Look at what he says in number 10. Isur nivol hamet hu al kol ha'olam kula. The prohibition on desecrating the dead is one that that divests on all of us. Not just individuals, not just the family. The Hagam Chiyav Akfura Hu Al Kol HaOlam Kula, he means the Jewish world here, that the Jewish world has to bury a mace mitzvah. It's everybody's obligation. Kula, V'rak Kishiyesh Kroivim, if there happen to be relatives, Mutal Al HaKroivim Tchila, then they have the primary obligation. Aval Kishileika Kan Kroivim, but if there are no relatives there, V'afilu Kishiyika Kroivim, or even if there are, V'ein Rotsim Lekavra, but they're not willing to bury, Hu mutal al kol Yisrael, every Jew has the obligation, dezeh meis mitzvah. And therefore nobody can say, not my problem. Any Jewish body that remains unburied is your problem, is my problem. V'kevan sha'al kol Yisrael, mutal chiyav hakfura, and since we all have an obligation to make this work, kol shekein sheyesh isa nivol hameis al kol Yisrael. So the first thing he says is, it's everybody's problem, and it's actually very interesting and very striking that the Jewish position is in direct contrast to the non-Jewish one. Who were the bodies that used to be dissected back in the day before? In 1832 in England, they passed a law allowing bodies to be donated by families or by individuals. Before that, you have the era of the body snatchers, if you've seen any, read any of the books, and Frankenstein is connected with this as well, that people used to, there was an illegal trade in bodies, and people used to dig them out of graves and sell them to a sort of underground anatomy places. But who are the bodies, who are the people who were most vulnerable? The answer is poor people, people who were not identified, homeless people, criminals. Those were the people whose bodies were hefka. And dafka, it's those people in halacha whose bodies are protected. Remember, it's the criminal hanging on the tree, which is the source for the mitzvah of burial. It's the mace mitzvah, it's the unclaimed body found in the street or the river, which is the thing that the Kohen Gadol himself is obligated to become tameh in order to bury. There's an enormous moral contrast between the Jewish position, which was classically from thousands of years ago that gave enormous respect to unclaimed bodies and even those of criminals, as opposed to the non-Jewish position that really treated them as hefker. Galen in ancient Rome, the only bodies that he was able to work on were those of criminals thrown into the Tiber, and that he would, if they washed up, he was lucky to get a skull here and there. Fine. So that's Rav Moshe saying it's all of our problem. And then he goes on to say that as far as he's concerned, there is really no, he takes the classic position of the Node of Yehuda and says that there really has to be a body, has to be a sick person, lefaneinu. We have to absolutely know that someone is going to directly benefit from this procedure before we allow it. Otherwise, not. Look at the last couple of lines. Yes, here in bold. Alma dikeven de habdika yehe nivul hames. Wherever any kind of intrusive procedure was going to be a desecration of the dead, asur, it is prohibited. The loynid chanival ames bishvil sofik hatzala demiat. If it's a far-fetched minority cases in the future, no way. And he says, of course, if there's someone about enu chamer is the nivul ames mishari surim. If there's a real mate, a real chole in front of us, then it can be done. Rabbi Vadi Yosef also takes a classically hard line, and he says that there is no heter of any kind of medical research other than pikuach nefesh lefaneinu, and he goes on and talks, this was presumably written in the 50s, 60s, about the scandals of the doctors who do this and they're not, and against everybody's wishes, against everybody's screaming, that they shouldn't do it, and all of this tension that I described to you in Israel. Rabbi Vadi Yosef says, no way, absolutely not, and of course, the Rabbanut later took a much harder line than Rav Herzog did in 1948 because of a response to the medical profession pushing in the other direction. So the Rav Moshe, Rav Avadia, very, very clear. Who owns the body? Rav Moshe has an interesting tshuva here, and he asked, who is the person that is able to donate their body to medical research? And he clearly says no. Look at what he says here. This is a tshuva that he wrote to Rav Moshe Scherer. I'm sure a few of you will have known Rav Moshe Scherer, a very, very important Afghan in Agudas Yisrael back in the day. Look at the first line he says here. Dava shenishul mi Washington. There's a question that's come to me from Washington. Mi lishkat hanasi, brackets, office shel ha-president. The president himself, the government is raising these questions in halacha through Moshe Scherer, or Moshe Scherer is raising them. Even if a person gives in their will, donates their body to medical research, is that or is that not allowed? And he says very clearly, I'm going to answer you very quickly. Chazal had a clear din. Ish mi pi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom shekibal mi Sinai, and he says it goes all the way back to Ha-Sinai, which is, you know, he really wants to give it chizuk, okay, which is what? Ein shum adam ba'alim al gufo letavot sheyase begufa afilu rak ve'eve echad me'evrov shum davar. Nobody owns their body. You do not own your body. You cannot say what will happen to your body after a person dies, after lo tzorchei hasagas yedias, even for medical research, le'inyani refuah, even if you think that's noble, which it is, it's not allowed. The kol shekein shebanav akrov of einon ba'alim azeh, and all the more so, the family have no right to donate a body. Okay, the family has the right to oppose the wishes of the deceased, maybe, but not to donate the body. And the Rav Moshe gives very clear guidelines on that. Other people, by the way, are less clear on that. There are other poskim that say that Tzitz Eliezer, for example, says that if a person consents to an autopsy, again, everything I say in this shir is just the tip of the iceberg. If you want more information, I'll show you at the end where to get some more. He says if a person consents to an autopsy, then that's okay. Maybe not to medical research, but to an autopsy, even if it's not pikuach nefesh, then he disagrees with Moshe, and he says you do have some level of control over your own body. Rav Kook has a tshuva which came out in the 1920s. Early 30s, 1931, he's obviously dealing with the Hebrew U issue. And in 1931, there was still no medical school. They were still having this argument. And look at what he says here. You need bodies to study anatomy. It seems to me clear that the desecration of a body is related to the kedusha of the Jewish person. Hashem gave us commands to be of kedushas aguf. Look what he says here. Just like we don't eat pigs and insects and dogs and cats. It's not because they're not healthy. Because we have a special kedusha. God called us a holy people. The Hagoyim, but the non-Jews, they don't care about kedusha. They care about what's healthy. They eat food if it's healthy, if it's naturally healthy. Fair enough. So too, they don't care either way if you dissect the body afterwards. Why do they care? It's nothing to do with kedusha. As long as it's healthy, as long as it's good for science, why would the non-Jewish people care? Their interest is purely physical, and dissecting a body will give physical potential benefits. Therefore, he says, Alkein, anachnu, in the second paragraph, anachnu tzrichim liknot bekesef mali. We have to spend good money to buy gviot meitim, dead bodies, cadavers, mi'umas ha'olam, from non-Jewish sources. Bishvil ha'matara hamada'it. We need a medical school, says Rav Kook, and we need non-Jewish bodies. Not Jewish bodies. And why should non-Jews even care? And he says, V'eimachush b'zeh mishum sinat ha'goyim. And don't turn around and say, T'chil al Hashem, the non-Jews are going to hate us. And then he goes on to say, because educated non-Jews will appreciate what we say, and uneducated non-Jews will hate us whatever we do. So why do you even care? Okay? And therefore he says at the end, this clearly is the way forward. We have to have non-Jewish bodies. And this is one of the ways forward that some of the medical schools use. Interestingly, the Hebrew University and Tel Aviv University, to my knowledge, my daughter-in-law is involved in Hadassah Medical School right now. And she really, you know, brought this topic to my attention more. She's in Hebrew U, and they use Jewish bodies. Whether they use Jewish bodies because they feel that's the easiest to achieve, to receive, or whether they're making a point, whatever, but Rav Kook said no, they shouldn't be doing that, they should be using non-Jewish bodies, and they should be able to get them. There are enough non-Jewish people in the world to be able to get hold of non-Jewish bodies. Okay, that's Rav Kook's psak based on Kedushas Yisrael. Okay, a couple of other things. On the issue of benefit from a body, there is a shaila. If you're dissecting a body, is that called benefit from a body? What if you're just watching? This is one of the things that is advised to from students in medical school. Leave aside, by the way, folks, the issue of Kohanim. I'm not getting into Kohanim now. Kohanim have obviously major problems involved in dissection. A Kohen is not allowed to cut open to touch even a non-Jewish body. They may be allowed in the same room as a non-Jewish body, but Kohanim is a whole different question, which is not for now. Some people say, well, don't cut, just watch. Then that's not called benefit. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says no. Even limud, even learning knowledge that comes from something which is prohibited, is itself prohibited in Hana. This is very interesting, and may go to the issue as well of benefiting from horrific experiments which were done by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, during the war. Can we benefit from that medical research? He doesn't address that directly here, but he says, even if you're only benefiting in a way which is learning, which is indirect, he says it's prohibited. You cannot just stand and watch. That's also called benefit. And he has a very complicated connection there with sounds and shade and discussions in the Gemara as to what is benefit, what isn't benefit. But he says here clearly that this would be. Someone wrote here on the group, couple of interesting things. Just let me jump in here. The Muslims object to autopsies. Yes, they do, classically. And Muslim universities did not have medical schools. Now that many of them do, because they are less religiously connected, but Hebrew U, basically, they said, well, the Muslims can't have a medical school, so you can't have a medical school. Someone asked about cremation. We're not talking about cremation here. Cremation is clearly prohibited in all cases, and even if a person says that they wish to be cremated, the family is obligated to ignore those wishes. Someone made a point about Dr. Tendler, correct, and someone pointed out that he's not a medical doctor, he's a doctor of biology. Okay, let's go on a little bit. This is hopefully interesting, I'm finding it very, very interesting. A couple of other cases, and then we'll give the last word to the religious Zionists. just for today. There is an issue of what is nibul hamet. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very important heter. Even though he's been quite prohibitive, he has a heter here in number 16. He says that anything that you would do to a live body, by definition, cannot be called a desecration to a dead one. And therefore, if one just needs to take blood samples or some kind of endoscopic investigation, you can put in a tube and look in that way. Anything that you would do to a live person is not called nibul hamet, and that obviously opens up the options considerably more for post-mortems as well. The issue of, somebody just put on the chat here that Hebrew University Medical School was established in 1925. So we have to find out when they started doing anatomy. That might be an interesting question as to when they brought in anatomy research. What is pikuach nefesh lefaneinu? Let's just ask that question. We said if there is a sick person right there. So, okay, the Nodi Yehuda lived a long time ago. He lived in Prague. There was no way they could get information from overseas with instant communication, obviously. Does this change today in a world where there is immediate, you know, connection with the outside world? And the Shri Dei Eish said yes. The Shri Dei Eish said that today, Pikuach Nefesh Lefaneinu is not just the people in your town or the people in your area, but anyone in the world who could be connected, who could benefit from this procedure. So that obviously opens up the options. Some Rabbonin said, yeah, but a lot of autopsies are performed for no good reason at all, and they don't benefit anybody. They're not putting it out on the internet so someone can benefit. So that's a theoretical issue. Okay, depends on how you look at it. The Chazon Ish, let me mention, had a very important fact where he said, in a pandemic, we can relate to this clearly today, in a pandemic, then lefaneinu means really any situation where you're dealing with the illness that you're investigating, you're trying to develop treatments for, then there for sure is a pikuach nefesh lefaneinu. Even if you don't know that there is somebody who needs the benefit of this, there is, because we're in a pandemic scenario, and he extends it clearly there. And there are others, for example, in the army. Are you allowed to take skin grafts from dead soldiers, loyaleinu, to treat other soldiers that have not even been burnt yet? But you know in the course of battle that there will be soldiers who will be injured. You doubt that they won't be, but you know probably they will be, and that can you take skin grafts so that they will be there for those people? That also, the Poskim have said, is lefaneinu, because you know that the reality is it's going to be there, even though these people have not even been injured at the time that you're asking the shayla. Okay, let's look at the last tranche of tshuvas, and then I'll summarize. I obviously won't have time to read them all inside, but I recommend that you read them. They are Rav Herzog, Rav Uziel, Rav Goren, and Rav Mashash. Rav Herzog, as I said before, clearly permits the investigation on dead bodies for medical research. But why? The reason why is because he says, and he sets this national agenda, which is very important in Hashkofa. It's important we talk about this for a minute. He says the case of the Nodi Yehuda, number 17, was a one-off individual case. He says, we're not talking about one-off cases. We're talking about a medical system for the Jewish people in Israel. It's not the same as an individual. It's a national shaila. We need doctors, and doctors need to train on bodies. And if we want to have a medical service, the pikuach nefesh has a whole different framework. And Rav Goren basically says almost exactly the same thing. Rav Goren's tshuva is very strong. He says that although the Chasan Sofer, the Nodi Yehuda, yes, they are the pillars on which we base our psak, now that we have a state, the cheshbonot are different. And the state itself is pikuach nefesh lefaneinu. Now, obviously many postmen would disagree with this, but Rav Goren looks at it as a religious Zionist, and when he was in the Rabbanut, in the chief rabbi, he sees that the state itself demands a different analysis of the halacha. It's no longer the individualized halachic situations of the 18th, 19th century. And this is a similar argument with Gerim, with Kashrus. Do we look at the state of Israel as a new reality which demands a different perspective? Or do we just see that the state is 8 million individual Jews who need the same halachic analysis as Jews in the past? And that will depend on your hashkafa. That's where the hashkafa and the halacha interface. And Rav Gorin clearly says that Pikuach Nefesh Lefaneinu means applies in today's world, in the land of Israel, because we need a medical service. Rav Uziel says he doesn't see a problem as long as you don't sell the bodies, but you can read that in your own time. Just to summarize, many of the points that you made on the chat are actually very, very important. This has become a much smaller issue over the last 30 years for a number of key reasons. Number one, many more people die now in care homes than in hospitals, and therefore autopsies are far less relevant. Number two, autopsies are less useful today. There are many ways that we can do with the medical scanning, with MRIs, with CTs. We get so much more information from live patients that we don't need to dissect dead patients. And even after death, you can do non-invasive autopsies, which can scan the body. In England, there was a big push in Manchester in the Chevra Kedisha. I brought you some footnotes that I got from my uncle, my wife's uncle, who's the head of the Chevra Kedisha in Manchester, about how they invested in a machine that could actually scan the bodies after death and avoid the need for almost every single autopsy. They got permission from the British authorities to do that. In fact, I quote, one of the medical journals has said that the decline in hospital autopsy in England has continued relentlessly, and for better or worse, the practice is on the verge of extinction in the UK. So actually, autopsies are far, far less relevant now than they were 40, 50 years ago. In the 1950s, it was standard for most bodies to be dissected after death. Now it's less than 1%. In many places, and as I said, on the verge of extinction. So this actually is a fascinating halakhic question, which is disappearing into a non-issue. Even medical training, there is 3D programs, there are all sorts of, they'll soon have holograms and all sorts of things that will enable doctors to be trained without the need for dissection, although some may disagree with that. I'm not a medical person, you can go and ask them. Finally, if you want, I brought you two other things and then we'll close. I brought you some references for further reading. Avram Steinberg obviously has a lot to say about this in the Encyclopedia Hilchasit Rufu'it. Rav Malamed has a lot to say about it as well, and some other further reading. So hopefully that was of interest. One last point, by the way, which you may not be aware of, is if a person is not buried whole, there are still some parts unburied, then if they have Kohanim who are relatives, they may not go to the funeral unless it's the entire body being buried. Because everyone knows a Kohen is allowed to go to a funeral for an immediate relative, but that's only if the relative is being buried whole. And that is a point that not everybody knows about. Organ donation is a completely different topic. Someone just asked. We did talk about it. We will again, please God, at some point, but we are out of time. Okay, so there ends our discussion on burial, autopsies, and dissection. I hope it was helpful, useful. We could have done 6 or 7 shirim about this, but I'm not sure that everyone has the stomach for that. Next week we will go on to something more relevant to today's world, which is the bracha on the coronavirus vaccine. And then I want to get into some interesting bracha shilas, especially something which I feel strongly about, which is chocolate-coated raisins. And if you want to know the connection between chocolate-coated raisins and Hilchos brachos, you have to stay with us. They are, let's face it, the important questions of life. But with that, I leave you. I wish you a very happy week. Be well, and thank you again for all your sponsorship. Please God, we'll see you next week. All the best.